AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. That lovely weather you see out there, courtesy of Sven Sundgaard, weatherman extraordinaire from bringmethenews.com. Of course, he's also got his fantastic YouTube page as well. If you're not following him there, by all means, you need to do that. Hey, Sven, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
All righty. You were out, down in the Southeast Metro. You went out and did what a lot of us are doing right now, which is going out to sports fields and seeing family and friends play sports, right?
Yeah, well, I ended up actually not, so hopefully my brother's not listening. No, he knows all about it. Well, so I have a 4-year-old nephew who just joined a soccer deal, and, you know, it's for little kids. Well, I didn't realize that it's only 30 minutes long, so anyway, that's the short story version of it, but I'll be out there probably next week. Yeah, Cottage Grove is my hometown, so and that's where they are.
Well, it's a nice town too. I like it down there. I will say this, as a parent of three kids, I can tell you I have been to every corner of this metro area for sporting events in every town, and it's nice. This is really one of the nicest times of the year. Because let's just be honest, that we get a few tulips, we get a few daffodils, but then boom, May comes in. Things got slowed down. We talked last week about how the cooler weather seemed to slow things down. But now that we're starting to warm up, everything is popping everywhere.
Oh, yeah. It's every day. You look at the tree canopy and you can see the difference.
Your last weather forecast had what I'm going to call the scariest damn map I've ever seen in my life. It was
which one?
The CO2 the CO2 map for spring.
Oh, yeah.
And what is terrifying, and I'm going to let you explain this a little bit because I want everyone to go watch that video. But
it's something you have to see rather than just listen to, for sure.
It is terrifying how much CO2 is in our atmosphere in the Northern Hemisphere in spring.
Absolutely. And we go through a natural cycle. So the reason I showed it is that, when NASA or whatever the World Meteorological Organization, whatever entity goes through and looks at data, it's usually a delay after the month in question because they go through and quality control and check everything. So just now that we're in the middle of May, we're getting a good picture of all the numbers for April. So, for example, we know April was yet another warm month globally. And in fact, I'd retweeted this today too. If you are 28 years old or younger, which you or I both are not, no. But there are many people are, you have never experienced in your life a month on this planet that was cooler than the average. So it's been 28 consecutive years. I don't remember which. I think this is month 344.
Wow.
Of consecutively above normal temperatures. Yeah, just to put that in perspective. And again, the tweet that I posted is a great visual of just how it's just been. Yes, we have weather. Some years are warmer or cooler than others, but the trajectory is undeniably up and away. But to get to your carbon dioxide thing, same thing. We know that the April average for carbon dioxide was the highest we've ever recorded. And April is the highest time of year for carbon dioxide. And then typically it's August, September, October, somewhere in there is a low spot. And it is because of photosynthesis in the Northern Hemisphere. So we breathe out carbon dioxide, of course, all living things, but plants and not just plants that we think of our forests, but like kelp, algae in the oceans also photosynthesize and absorb carbon dioxide. But the big difference, the reason we see a huge seasonal variation is that you look on a globe, there's just way more landmass in the Northern Hemisphere versus the Southern Hemisphere. And what do we know is happening this time of year, as we were just talking about, is all of our trees start exploding. Both here in North America, but also Europe, Asia, Siberia, where we have seasonal, growth to our trees. So while the Amazon is super important, definitely, all of our rainforests are, because they are absorbing carbon dioxide year round, our deciduous forests, our great deciduous forests in the Northern Hemisphere also are super important to reducing carbon dioxide emissions. And you can see it in visually what I show in that video that you're referring to is a video from NASA that literally loops carbon dioxide seen from satellites through the year. And you can see the dramatic difference in how much atmospheric CO2 there is at the end of the Northern Hemisphere summer versus the end of the Northern Hemisphere winter. But then what's also cool, if you keep looking at it, you can see plumes of carbon dioxide from polluters. You can see carbon dioxide coming out of spots in China, in Canada, in the U.S., in Russia, and also forest fires that pop up in Africa, Australia, or the West Coast. So you can see all the individual contributions that all of those make to our carbon dioxide emissions too. But if they call it, NASA calls the video Earth breathing. You literally can see Earth breathing as our trees absorb carbon dioxide.
It is fascinating. I'm fascinated by I read the book 6 Degrees, and it talked about, goes back in history and talks about, you know, when the Earth almost got wiped out, and thank God for trees, because the plants came back and, you know, were able to absorb as much of the carbon dioxide as we have, and which is, by the way, all the oil and coal that we're using up now. But, you know, is there, I mean, obviously we've talked about the deforestation of Brazil and other areas, the logging out in the West Coast. Is there a concern on a breakpoint? I know you talked about plant 2 trees for every one that's taken down. But is there a concern about we get to a point where we won't have enough trees to take care of that on the spring basis?
I mean, the forests, I mean, assuming we don't, you know, shrink forests dramatically more from where we're at now. Luckily, I think most places have some form of sustainable forestry, so there's not a net loss. So there will probably always be that cycle. And even if, let's say, God forbid, we reduce forests in the Northern Hemisphere by half, you're still going to see that seasonal variation just because trees do absorb so much. But obviously, the net impact would be a lot more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere all the time. But, you know, I like to show that, you know, and part of why I brought it up this week, too, is I've been talking to my middle school earth science students about this week, and they're fascinated by it. And, you know, I tell them, I said, well, there's all sorts of solutions and complicated answers to, you know, reducing carbon dioxide emissions and how can we get rid of the carbon dioxide that's in the air already. But one of the simplest ones is trees. Plant, if we plant trees back where they already were before,
yeah,
you know, reforest areas and quit developing areas, that's going to have a huge impact. Obviously, we're not going to be able to plant, you know, I think it's 3 trillion trees or something is the estimate of what we would need to get rid of the carbon that's in the air right now. But, you know, and this is, it's going to be multifaceted. We have to do that and, you know, reduce fossil fuel emissions and reduce our agricultural footprint, you know. And one of the uncomfortable conversations to have with people is we just inevitably we have to eat less meat. It's not just because the cow is passing gas, mm-hmm. which people kind of laugh at. It's because of all the land and resources that is taken up for that cow. And specifically in a part of the world that we just talked about, Brazil, they're clearing rainforest for beef cattle. So not only are you plant growing an animal that requires more resources than just eating the plants directly, but you're cutting down a forest that is an absorber of carbon dioxide emissions. So you're even double, triple, quadrupling the impact of doing that. And a lot of it's illegal, but, you know, so that's why we got to have this sort of conversation. You know, nobody's saying the whole world has to be vegan or what was it that, you know, Joe Biden was going to make beer, take the meat out of beer, whatever stupid thing that was.
You can make it vegetarian, yes.
But if we can all reduce our meat consumption and make it more of a special meal instead of, you know, a regular thing, that would have a huge impact. Plus, it's going to be healthier for us, too, yeah. If we're honest with ourselves.
The man does not lie. You also brought up the algae blooms, too, which I think is – I've been reading more myself a little bit about how if we don't get more of the oceans return to normal, not these massive freaking garbage patches out in the middle of them, but, you know, that as well, we have to make sure that they, you know, because they're warming up, it's changing the dynamics of the ocean. We got to make sure the oceans as well can absorb that CO2 as well.
We definitely need healthy oceans. And I know a lot of people have seen Seaspiracy on Netflix, myself included, and it's pretty alarming. And there's some controversy as to, you know, how accurate it is or not. But the basic idea is our oceans are not healthy right now. We are, whether it's everywhere or in many places, we are practicing unsustainable fishing. And not just that, but the plastic waste, one of the things that they make in the film, which is true, is there's a lot of waste from unsustainable fishing line, and animals get caught in it, It's bad for the oceans. You look at Google Earth, most of the planet is ocean. So we needed to be healthy, not just for the food chain, but also for our planet. We know that 90% of the heat that the planet has absorbed because of our activity has been absorbed by the ocean so far. Mm-hmm. So think of that. Think of the dramatic changes we've seen on the planet, and only 10% of it is on land or air. 90% is in the oceans, and a lot of that's because water just can contain more heat. But at what point do we reach that tipping point? And all that extra heat is having an impact on the ocean, whether it's coral bleaching or wiping out species. And, you know, one of the alarming things that we've been seeing now that, you know, technology is getting better is the depths of the ocean, which we used to think were kind of immune or at least changing more slowly to the warming, are actually warming up more dramatically than we had anticipated.
I've seen that too, and they're really very concerned about what's happening down the deep depths, because that seems to be the palate cleanser, as you could say. Kind of, you can have bad things happen at the top, but as long as the bottom's working, it's fine. But now the bottom's starting to break, and that's a little concerning as well. We've had here in Minnesota, of course, we talked about the 3 weeks of cool, 3 or 4 weeks of cooler weather. You talked about this weird jet stream that was kind of bouncing all over the place. It finally is getting pushed out of the way. And today, in what looks like the next few weeks, we're going to have some spectacular weather coming on in.
This just seems how like it is really almost every year anyway, is that you just flip a switch and boom, it's summer. You know, maybe there's a couple more minor hiccups, but yeah, it looks like 70s and 80s next week, starting at least Monday, maybe even as soon as Sunday, we could be back in the 70s. We have hit 70 today, by the way, but tomorrow probably be a touch cooler because of some clouds. And we got just a couple minor shower chances late tomorrow and then again late Saturday. So with a little bit more cloud cover the next couple days, that might keep us a touch cooler. But, you know, that's the other big thing. Not only are we going to be switching to warmer temperatures, because as you mentioned, the jet stream, the upper level pattern looks a little more like it should instead of these just wonky. I mean, it's the only way I can explain it is like a slinky that's tied in knots is basically how our upper level patterns look like. And so that's when that happens, you can imagine it's harder to straighten it out, just like it's harder to untangle a slinky that's in knots versus just kind of gently, you know, wavy. And so that's finally happening. But also what that means for us is we are going to get into a stormier pattern, which is good and bad. I mean, obviously, we never really like severe weather, but the reality is 70% of our important rainfall, the growing season rainfall, which for crops, but also trees and all our native plants, relies on thunderstorms. You know, May through September, the vast majority of precip comes from thunderstorms. And so we need to get into that more thunderstorm pattern. And that's why May is actually pretty dry so far. We're over an inch behind normal, and we're not even into the midway point. And that's because of the cool weather that's translated into mostly dry weather, because we just get these minor precip events like what we'll see tomorrow, versus you got to have that warmer, more humid air mass in order to produce storms and more heavier precip. So luckily, it looks like we're going to be getting into that later next week too.
And it brings, and you were talking about this in your weather forecast, the energy that's going to produce these storms, that's coming in here with those warmer temperatures next week too, right?
Yep. Dew points are going to increase. It's one thing to have it warm up, but we also need to bring in that moisture. And that means a flow from the south that lasts more than one day, which is basically all we've had so far this spring. You know, it takes, when you're driving 20 miles an hour, just ask, you know, a grandparent from the south, it's going to take a few days to get here. And so, yeah, no offense to old people.
Well, but it is your description is perfect. There is a bit of a fire concern right now. How, as you said, we're an inch behind on water. How is there a real, danger right now in Minnesota?
Yeah, we have had red flag warnings on and off. And part of that is, you know, there is a natural cycle. Spring is our fire season. We tend to think of, you know, the Western states or Australia as having fire seasons, and that's more dramatic there, certainly. But ours comes mostly in April, and then again to a lesser extent in the fall. But, you know, while waiting for everything to green up, all that dead vegetation and the fact that we have just these ridiculously dry but warm days. Today is an example, 70 degrees right now, but the dew point's 25. Yeah. So the relative humidity is 18%. So when it's that low, you know, that means that any bit of moisture is evaporating into the air very efficiently, and so it just dries things out. Now, luckily, here in the southern part of the state, as we also started the conversation with, things have greened up here, so that reduces that. But there's still debris left, you know, from all the dead plant material from the winter. And, of course, in the northern half of the state, it is not nearly as green as here. And so that's where that fire danger concern is particularly. So, yeah, until we get – again, we got to get the humidity levels up too. It's not just rain, but get those humidity levels up so that we're not evaporating the moisture that's in the soil out so quickly.
A little cooler tomorrow, but then back up into the 70s by next week. And are we going to hit 80 on Tuesday? Is that going to be a possibility?
I think we're going to have a string of 80s, could be two or three of them. The European model has us in the 80s Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, maybe even Thursday too. The Canadian model is another model that has got us in the 80s. It looks like 4 days. The American model has been flirting with our first 90 of the season coming potentially the week after next, which would be about a week earlier than the average. Okay. Usually sometime in the first week of June is the average date of that first 90-degree reading. So, yeah, we could be talking about legit summer temperatures, not just 70s, which we'd all be happy with right now, but actually, you know, right into June, July weather.
Sven Sundgaard, once again, you can find his weather forecast over at bringmethenews.com. Also, YouTube. I'll make sure you follow his YouTube page. I'll link to that as well. Sven, thank you as always. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon, my friend.
You bet. Enjoy the warmer weather.
Take care. Wow, the outstanding visit with Sven today. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.